Hey there, it's Will Alexander with Will Alexander's Dog Show Tips, brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV. This week on the interview chair, we have none other than Mr. Robert Whitney. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, everybody. Today on the in the interview chair, we have none other than Robert Whitney. Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm great, Will. How are you?
Well, it's good to see you. How's Mom?
Great. Great. A little tired today. Yeah. We had babies last night.
Oh, good.
So she was up all night.
Well, life of a breeder. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's get right into it, Bob. Tell me how you got involved in the sport of dogs.
Well, it's funny. I'm a little unusual. For most of the people in dogs, they either came through their family or whatever. I didn't actually get I didn't get a purebred dog until I was about 24. Yeah. I was walking down the main street of Toronto, Yonge Street, one day. And this Afghan puppy came the other way towards me on a lead. You have to be on a lead. And I thought they were the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I went out and did all the wrong things. I looked up the ads in the Toronto Star newspaper, found somebody that was selling a litter, and went and saw them. And what did I know? Anyhow, I got a really nice English setter. or Irish setter. Probably Irish setter would be better. She was red, so. But she had a setter tail and everything. But that dog, for the first year that I went, talk about making all the wrong mistakes. I went to obedience classes with her. Now, anybody that does obedience and knows Afghans know they don't go together. But anyhow, I met somebody there, and they told me about a match that was at York Farmers Market, north of Toronto. And there used to be one every Sunday. Place was a little hall, and it was packed to the gunnels.
Every
weekend, all the Toronto area people went. And I met a couple people, met Edgar Bayona, well known in Afghans, and I made all my mistakes with my dog's name was Kobe. And I did everything wrong. You know, I had no idea, but she was my learning tool. And she did teach me a lot of things. I always thanked her for that. I made entries out wrong. I double entered Canadian bred and open, lost in Canadian bred, couldn't go in open. And all those nonsense things that happened. But anyhow, I got involved in the breed and in the local club and that sort of thing. And then I looked south of the border. I did a lot of research, and I found a lady and her husband, Romaine Switch and Mike Switch. She judges, still does judge, not as much now. She has Salukis more than Afghans now. But anyhow, I met her. What I did is I went on a two-week holiday and went around and I hit all the shows in Ohio and on the East Coast. I'm forever asking questions, always asking questions, met a lot of people, saw a lot of nice dogs. And I wound up getting a little black bitch from Romaine Switch, who did very well. She won sweeps. She won points in an American specialty, and I never registered her, so I'm sure I lost those points. But it wasn't a big deal to me at that point. But I really got to love the breed. they are a breed that is not for everyone. I mean, there's no getting around it.
Yeah.
I did a little bit of breeding, not a lot of breeding with them. Then, now in those days, this was in the, I started in 1969. In the 70s, early 70s, when you went to a dog show in Ontario, if there were under 50 Afghans entered, there had to be something wrong with the judge. Normally, you got 70, 75 Afghans, 15 to 20 specials. I mean, that was competition.
Yeah.
So you either learned or you got out. And I loved the sport once I got into it. And I just watched and watched and asked a lot of questions and sort of went from there with the Afghans. I showed my own dogs. And then other people started asking me if I would take their dog to the show. And I got more and more of that. And then I handled some other sight hounds. And it just sort of grew from there.
You skipped right over Bullwinkle.
Oh, yeah. Bullwinkle was my dog that did the most winning. He was down from, what was his name? Ammonhall. Well, I can't think. Out of Ohio. Gary DeMarco bred him. He wasn't a big dog, but he could move like the wind. He won my first best in shows. I had lots of fun with him. My biggest problem with showing Bullwinkle was when I was competing seriously in the group. I had to compete against Dick Mean with Mustache.
I'm sure, yeah.
So I got a lot of seconds. I saw the back end of Dr. Mean a lot. But we became quite good friends, very good friends. And, you know, we did our thing. We were top Afghan a number of years.
I remember.
Yeah. But as I said, the competition was pretty hot then, you know. But that was good. It made, I always said more competition made us work harder at it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It makes you better.
Yeah. But with all the grooming that goes in with an Afghan, I mean, you'd spend hours grooming the dogs, you know. And but it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And I think I had a handle on where they were coming from, the breed, I mean, because they weren't for everyone, and they certainly weren't a breed that everyone could handle. You know, they weren't a tough breed, and sometimes some people thought they were stupid, and the odd one was, but they... you know, they were fairly sensitive to everything. Like a lot of sight hounds are, you know, but I enjoyed it. And it was great competition. I had a nasty habit of when I was showing, for instance, Bullwinkle. His name was Amberhall Serpent's Tooth, actually. And when I showed him, if there was a three-day show, which we didn't have a lot of them, a lot of the shows were Saturday, Sunday, but quite often I went after one day, and I really studied the judges I showed under and that sort of thing, and it would frustrate the hell out of some people, because I would come in and win one day and go home, and they wouldn't see me for a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden I'd be back, you know. Now, when I was campaigning, I did campaign them at a lot of shows,
yeah,
one after the other. But
so, who do you think your mentors would be then, Bob?
Probably in Afghans, Billy Milne. Mm-hmm. We had quite a good connection. We got along. he enjoyed having a good time. I enjoyed having a good time. In fact, one year we traveled all year together and we both had Afghan specials.
Wow.
All the way to the show, we would tell each other how we were going to beat the other one. And then all the way home, we would either be laughing at the other one or say, how the hell did that third dog win? So it was good fun. And Billy was always good for a lark. But we miss him, of course.
Yeah.
Romaine Switch helped me a lot originally. There were some other people. I'm going to name somebody that probably some old timers would remember, and that was Albert Farrell. There was Anita Farrell. Anita, was that her name? She ring stewarded a lot. No, that wasn't it. Anyhow, this couple, they had English bulldogs. And I can remember sitting at the Sportsman Show, which was a bench show. You were there for the day. And one year I happened to be benched right beside Albert. And he could hardly hear at that point. But I found out years later, actually, when Elaine attended a big weekend seminar education thing on, they had an array of pictures of all the past winners, and a number of the dogs were theirs from Toronto. But he told me all about dog shows and all about showing and all about breeding. He used to say, you have to decide what you like in the breed, but you have to appreciate different types. You don't have to necessarily go out and buy one, but you should appreciate what they're like. And a lot of people have a hard time doing that are within a certain breed, whether it be German Shepherds or whatever. And that's a hard thing when you start judging, because you won't necessarily always get the type that you're crazy about. So you have to sort through the rest and see what you like, you know. But Annie, of course, was very good to Elaine and I, and Rogers Clark, that is. I should say Mrs. Clark, because Elaine and her did quite a bit with the poodles back and forth when Elaine had poodles. And we were fortunate to be on a number of panels with them. The funniest day, this was when we were into Cavaliers later. We were having lunch and she said, I'm doing Cavaliers right after lunch and you're in the ring next to me. And I want you to watch me if you can while you're judging. And I want to talk about Cavaliers after. You tell me where I screwed up or didn't do too well. She didn't use the word screw up. That's my word. And I'm thinking, now, how the hell am I going to tell Mrs. Clark that she sort of got the open bitch class a little mixed up? You know? But she had just started judging them. And so, but we had a great discussion after. Another time that she helped us, Elaine and I early on attended the week-long American Judges Education, which was probably the best thing we've ever attended. You had classes in the morning where you had a lot of the top name people, not specific of breeding, but of judging. Mm-hmm. And then in the afternoon, they had six rings set up. And this is 5 days. Every day, we had six different breeds. So that's, what, 30 breeds over the course of the thing. One day would be an emphasis on heads, per se. One day would be on movement. Actually, the last day, you could tell whoever you were with if you judged if you were having problems. And my biggest issue at that point was my speed of judging. I was dead slow, you know, dead slow. My friends used to come along and give me the hurry up sign and that sort of thing. Anyhow, she took me into a class of Gordon Setters, which I was licensed to judge. And she stood behind me and she said, "Why are you doing that again? You don't have to do that again. You already know, you know, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." "Well, what are you doing it for the people or are you doing it?" She said, "You got to do it in a," and she helped me a lot. And in fact, that Friday night, I flew to Toledo to judge. And it's the first time at an American show I ever had time at the time breaks to sit down. Because she had instilled in me, you know, you just keep going, keep going, keep going, and don't dither. And she helped me a lot with that. I'm trying to think who else. Skip Stanbridge was a great guy to talk to about judging.
Well, for sure.
You know, Elaine and I had dinner with he and Elsie a few times, and he just had a very down-to-earth way about him and about judging. You know, there wasn't a lot of arrogance or anything like that to him. And he just more or less said it the way it was. And I enjoyed that. But anyhow, there are a few of the people. There's a lot of others.
Well, I'm sure. I'm going to back you up, though. I want to go back to, because when I was growing up, you were a handler. So I want to go back to then, too. So you started handling on your own. Was it after Bullwinkle or?
Yes. Yeah, it was after Bullwinkle.
That was like 1975-ish, 76-ish?
Yeah, in about then. And I started showing a few other Afghans and that sort of thing. The handling aspect didn't intensify until Elaine and I got together.
Yeah.
I mean, I was handling for different people and I took those clients with me. But when Elaine and I started working together, we were drawing clients. Both were drawing clients. She had clients, of course, for a number of years before that. And I was getting a lot of new clients once we were, and especially when I went full-time. I had a full-time job at first, and I was almost going 24 hours a day, you know. You'd drive to work Sunday night, hopefully get there in time on Monday morning, you know. But especially when we went together and I went full-time with her, she already had the big kennel. And we used to carry about 20 to 25 dogs to every show.
You always have the biggest setup of the show, so.
Yeah, we worked hard at it. We had excellent help. We had a number of people that have gone on to judging. With that many dogs, you have to be super organized. And we had schedules and that sort of thing. The last number of years, we had a fellow named Chris Schott, who actually was a teacher, and he would come on the weekends, and his whole job was just to keep us organized. We'd come out of one ring, and he'd say, "Take your time, go to ring three, the bull terrier will meet you there," or "Run to ring three, and the bull terrier will meet you there." He used to, one of the fun times was first thing in the morning, of course, Elaine had a tendency to talk to one and all. And finally, Chris would come along and he'd say, "Elaine, time to get dressed." And we're going to start in 20 minutes, you know, you've got to be ready. But he was excellent at organizing us. The only time that we didn't take them, if you can believe, we flew to Vancouver. There was a set of shows 7 days in Vancouver, and we took 33 dogs on the plane. Yeah. That would never happen now.
Exactly.
Elaine and I and three assistants went. It was pre 9/11, so we drove right onto the tarmac. The fellows, the Air Canada fellows, were there. They had a big skid, and I told them who we built a pyramid, you know, three layers high, big dogs on the bottom to little dogs on top. These were all seasoned dogs that we took with us. And then they put a big, I mean, it was straight, big cargo net over it, strapped it, and then bulk loaded the whole thing right in the front of a 747 jumbo jet. And we had a van at the other end I had rented. And but we worked hard that week, but we did very well. We got three best in shows, a lot of money, which was, I don't know what it's like now, but in those days, the handler got any cash. And it was big money for best in show for the time. So, you know, you we worked hard at it until it became, you know, physically. And sometimes some clients, not the regular clients, but some clients thought you could work miracles.
Yeah.
You know, they give you a so-so dog and expect to go out and win groups or something. And you try and tell them, you're honest, it's the only way to be, that this is not going to win groups, you know. And I said, save your money, go buy a better dog. But some of them still, they just like to go. The last show we judged, or not judged, handle, well, the second last, was Credit Valley, which, you know, is a big show in Canada. And on the Saturday there, they had a lot of specialties, and they, we showed 39 dogs that day. And but we, between Elaine and I, we always got them in the ring. The assistants used to complain sometimes that they very seldom got to show a dog, unless we won more than one group or something like that. One time we won, this one, we won six out of the seven groups. And we didn't go best in show, though. The seventh dog won best. But that happens. You know, you can't do anything about that.
How old were you when you retired from handling?
Christ, I don't know. I retired from handling?
Yeah.
Well, I was born in 45, and that was 1989. So we'll say 1990. So I don't know. You figure the math. I wasn't old, but... But it wears you down.
Well, those numbers for sure.
You know, and we did 140 shows a year. You know, so in the summer, July and August, we were literally on the road full time. And the girls at the kennel used to bring dogs up to us wherever we were, and we'd switch about class dogs. We had a great advantage in that. We always had a lot of class dogs. We had certain dogs we were campaigning, but we had class dogs, and it was our goal to always have a lot of class dogs to keep the people happy, the clients. And if they had a lot of dogs, then we just bring them up in the kennel. Always had. It also gave us the advantage, especially in a breed like Afghans. I never showed, other than the special, I usually never showed the same dog two weekends in a row. And the main reason was not to give them a rest, but who the judges were. After a number of years, you get an idea of what a judge likes. So I used to frustrate the hell out of my competition because I'd bring a totally different type of dog and win with it, and then the next week bring another one, you know. But that's just knowing the judges,
sure,
what they like and don't like. But so I don't know how old I was.
Okay. So did you go right into judging as soon as you quit showing dogs?
Yeah. We had a 5-year plan. If anybody plans things, it's me. You know, I always have to have a, and 5 years, which would be about 1985, we decided, okay, we're going to eventually go into judging. Quite honest, I wasn't sure I was going to. Elaine always wanted to judge. And when we did start, I said, I will give it 2 years and then decide. And once I got into it, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So we decided, and all our clients knew the last year. We told them all in January, because we have a lot of, had a lot of repeat clients, that the end of the year, that was going to be it. And that's why that last show that we did, 39 dogs, a lot of clients wanted a dog shown at that show, that because we had shown for them. Some of them we hadn't shown a dog for in 10 years, you know. But so that was very nice. And then also the other thing that was great was all that year, a number of dog clubs knew it was our last year, and they gave us special presentations. We have a lot of pictures in the house that were given to us by different clubs, the Ottawa Kennel Club, CanSave, you know, a number of different clubs. So that was really good. We generally had a good rapport with the clubs, most, 99%. Unless they didn't want to let you in until 10 o'clock in the morning of a show.
But, so you,
but,
go ahead.
Anyhow, you asked me if I still had goals.
Well, I haven't asked that yet.
No, it's on your list. I got the list.
You still have goals, Robert?
I still have goals. My goals are like a bucket list goals.
Mm-hmm.
I've pretty well done everything in dogs. You know, there's always, I'd love to judge Cavaliers in England, or, you know, you'd like to do a national specialty or something like that. But my goals aren't, I have three things that I haven't achieved. I had 10 things on my bucket list. And the one is to visit the St. Petersburg in Russia. One is to attend the Kentucky Derby. And the other is to drive a 16 hitch of Clydesdales, which is weird. Right? Elaine and I always loved going to heavy horse shows. And actually, that was supposed to happen this year. We have a lady that breeds Cavaliers in Calgary, and she has a lot of heavy horses, and so we were going to go to the Calgary show in the summer and stay an extra day so I could drive the hitch.
Oh,
and wow. she was all set to set it up and everything. I said, but you better be sitting beside me to grab a rein. But it's just something I've always wanted to try. I've driven horses, but not that many.
You still can do it next year.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, what about, do you have a favorite win when you were showing dogs?
Well, I won the Afghan National with Bullwinkle under Dr. Gerda Kennedy.
Okay.
You know, that's an experience to show to her. I showed to her more than once, but I won the National under her. You better have your running shoes on with her. I'm not even sure if she's still alive, but she puts on a show. I really was happy about that. That was before I got into handling a lot. I've won the Cavalier National twice with dogs we were showing. That was after I was a handler. Most of our Cavalier handling was after our handling days. We had them through a lot of, but usually the kids wound up. The one other I thought about, I won Best in Show twice at the Met, the Metropolitan Show. And that was probably Canada's classiest show we've ever had. It was just, hi guy,
Yeah. Mine
are at my feet here. The Met was run by Herb Williams and Fred Petty. And they had a big dinner on the Thursday night. Loblaws, one of our big grocery
stores. Yes.
They did it. And we were fortunate enough to win a number of awards for top hounds and top terriers and top toys and different things. So quite often we were there getting something. And one year I surprised them a little. I got up and David Nichols, who was the president, always sat in the front row, front table. And I got up and I thanked him very much for holding this beautiful wedding reception for Elaine and I, because we had gotten married 2 days before that. And nobody in the room knew we had gotten married. So that was fun. But the Met really was a fantastic show. I look forward to that every year. And to win two of them, and I won them both with the same dog, a Saluki.
Rudy,
that's owned by Sue Robotham, not Bob Robotham, Sue Robotham. She told me I was her private handler.
There you go.
But actually, the show I talked about earlier with 33 dogs, I took Rudy with me and I won. I was campaigning in Afghan, but I won two of the shows with Rudy and called the Robothams at 3 o'clock in the morning here. And Bob's words were, well, you can win and make them top Saluki, but you couldn't do it last year when you campaigned him. He was number two Saluki and I think number four all breed. There was a Saluki from the West Coast that nipped us right at the end. But you never know.
Well, exactly. Never know. So what is your favorite breed, Bob?
Question six.
Who's running this interview?
Well, I can't be like my wife and just ramble for an hour.
Okay. What was your biggest obstacle in the sport then, Bob?
Probably my biggest obstacle truly was I don't suffer fools easily, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
And in hand with that is my mouth that could use a filter sometimes, you know, because I tend to just shoot it right from the hip. Especially if they irritate me. But, you know, that happens and, you know, I'm not going to change. No. As Elaine says, the old guy that's a grouch some days.
Okay, what's your favorite breed then, Bob?
Well, I've talked mostly about Afghans. Definitely Afghans and Cavalier King Charles.
Yeah.
We got into, Elaine and I got into Cavaliers probably about 40 years ago. Our kids used to travel on the road with us in the summer months, and we always tried to hook them up with a breed that they showed some interest in for juniors. Mm-hmm. And they had to take care of them, etc. And our son Chris loved the Cavaliers, and so we contacted Elaine Mitchell on the West. And
all right, honey, get up.
She sent us a dog for the summer who never went home. He stayed with us till he died. And now my son has English pointers, so we have Cavaliers. But we got right into them. We just love them, you know. We've had good fortune with the breed.
What about, are there any individual dogs that you, that are your favorite dogs that, not necessarily that you showed, but that you wish you could have been a part of or judged or something? Any dogs that come to mind?
Now you've jumped on me.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, you've got another question. What dog from the past do you wish you could have owned? And that's what this question is. Just trying to keep you organized. Anyhow, dogs from the past that I just loved. There was an Afghan, one's an Afghan and one's a Cavalier. There was a gentleman, he's still in California, named Lou Guerrero.
Yeah.
And he had a dog named Kalis. His kennel name was Genesis. So it was Genesis Kalis. I can't remember. But I can remember distinctly Billy Milne and I standing at ringside at the Gardens, screaming our heads off for this dog. He was just fabulous, and Lou just showed him to perfection. You know, I don't think he won that day, but we just loved him. The other dog that I really like is a Cavalier, and we had the good fortune to have him stay with us. He's owned by the Henrys in Texas, who we are partners with in many of our Cavalier escapades. And his name was Hurley's Bristol Blue. And he was out of a dog called Birthday Boy. But Bristol, he came here to Canada for the national. He won the national and won the regional. And he had to stay to get one more judge. So he stayed with us, and we couldn't show him because our name wasn't on him. So our daughter, Lori, showed him and finished him up. But he was a beautiful dog. And we actually have a girl here named Alice. Everybody in Ontario knows Alice. And we're going to breed him to Frozen Seaman from Bristol. Okay. You know. She has a litter now. We want to make sure she could have puppies. And we're going to breed to the, before we used up the Frozen Seaman.
Let's go back. What about, do you have a, is that your favorite dog then? What is your favorite dog?
I had three dogs that I showed that I really liked. Arthur was a Bull Terrier. English Bull Terrier, Abraxas Armonite, his name was. He was from a famous kennel in England called Abraxas. I couldn't believe it when the owners, I had shown other Bull Terriers for them, and they told me what they paid for this dog, and I just about fell over, because this gentleman was hard to get dogs out of the country. Anyhow, I think he was probably, it's close between the other two that I'll mention, but I think he was the best dog I ever showed. You know, the closest to the standard. He was a great showman, and he just loved showing. He wasn't too fond of Bichons, but one day, Chris, the fellow I talked about, he used to carry Arthur to the ring if it was crowded. Yeah. And he came up the ringside, and Arthur had a big fluff of white hair. And I said, did you pass any Bichons? He said, yeah, I did. Anyhow.
Small task, carrying a Bull Terrier ringside.
Yeah, well, he's a strong fellow. Other dog that I loved that drove me nuts was a dog owned by Cheryl Wallach named Simon. I'm sure I got ulcers from that dog. It was an Afghan hound. I showed him, and then I showed his full litter sister, who was a little easier to show. Simon had his own way of doing things, and but he did very well. He was top hound in the country, as was his sister. And they have that fabulous coast wind look to them. They are coast wind breeding behind Cheryl. Cheryl will tell you they're her breeding, but and they are. But she had to put the right ones together to get
them. She likes the coast wind look too, so.
Yeah, she loves that coast. Well, you know that. You campaigned one to top dog. But anyhow, you didn't steal the client. It was after we were I get that on the record. The third dog I loved showing was Watson, the English setter. He got to be top dog all breed the year I campaigned him. What's his name?
Storybrooke Marauder.
Storybrooke Marauder, right on. Bred in California. But he, like a lot of English setters, he just loved everybody and anything. You know, what do you want to do today? And except for thunderstorms. He hated thunderstorms. But anyhow, he was a great dog to have and to be able to show. He did very well in the ring. I had a group of judges. They were all friends, and they all loved this dog. And I just kept finding them wherever they were. But especially Hans Bernardi. He said one time, I think we have to quit meeting like this. I think he gave me three best dogs. Anyhow, they were three great dogs for me, personally.
What about advice? Do you have any advice for handlers or judges?
Well, for handlers, for young handlers, big thing is to get an education to fall back on. Nowadays, handling isn't as, how do I say it? You can't always make your living at it. It's unfortunate, but if you want to get into handling, and I think it's great if you do, you have to be prepared to apprentice under a real professional handler, not a weekend warrior. If you know what I mean by that, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, we do.
That's the way you're going to learn day in, day out. You have to be prepared to work and make very little money. They go hand in hand. I used to tell my assistants, being an assistant is like being on a totem pole.
And I've heard this.
You've heard it. At the top is Elaine. I come second. And it works down to the bottom, which is the latest assistant. And I used to tell them when they came on board, I said, now you have one person to keep happy, and that's that assistant over there. You know, because if something goes wrong, I'm going after her and she's coming to visit you, you know. But it's all done in good fun, hopefully. The odd time things get bent out of shape, but as a judge, I think the biggest thing is not to take yourself too serious.
That's good.
A lot of people think I'm a real grouch. especially in the ring, because I don't smile too much. Somebody put that on a critique or something one time. Could smile once in a while. But I'm generally, if I'm in judging and I have big entries, I'm thinking. I'm trying to think anyhow. I used to tell new judges, and somebody told me I had to stop saying this, that the breed standards were only guidelines. What you have to know is the essence of the breed. You know, they're all man-made breeds. Well, why were they made? You know, and understand that and how they worked, for instance, sporting dogs in the field. And when you look at a dog, can you say this dog could run for the day?
Watch him do
that sort of thing. And that's the hardest thing to grasp. I also say to new judges, and I actually got this from Annie, that you have to think positive. Have to think positive. When you look at a dog, and it's so hard, when you stand outside a ring and look at a class in the ring, if you just stand and listen to people out there, they're always talking, did you see the bad rear on that? Did you see the ugly head on that? Did you see? Not, God, that dog can move, you know, or that's got a beautiful eye on it. I wish I could get that eye on my dogs, you know. And so you'd look for the positive first. There isn't a perfect dog, unless you or I were showing it. But anyhow, to try and think positive, it's hard for a lot of Canadian judges. I'll probably get raffed for this, but they don't have the hands-on experience like yourself or myself or Elaine or Susan Hillman or Garrett Lambert, where we're worked with dogs every day during the day, in the kennel, getting them ready, whatever. So you learn a lot by osmosis. If you have one breed, and I used to always say, I never judged a new judge on their first group, but let me see them do their third group. And then I'll tell you whether they know up from down or they're just massaging the dogs. To a certain extent, it's easy to judge in Canada. You just read Canadian Dog Fancier or Show Scene. And if you put the winners up, you know. But a lot of those winners are there for a reason.
Oh, exactly.
And the question is, do you know what that reason is?
Well, why are they there?
And why are they there? So it's hard when you start judging, you know, and the big difference too between an ex handler and a single breed person is a handler, you're in their office. When they showed, they were in the rings all the time, you know, so they knew, you knew what. By the mood of the judge.
Oh, for sure.
Whether it was going to be a good day or a bad day, you know?
You'll take that human nature out of it sometimes.
Pardon?
People take that side of the human nature out of it sometimes. It's a big...
Oh, one. Yeah, yeah. They don't understand, you know? Maybe they had a bad morning or something, or somebody tackled them in the last class about what they did, you know?
Yeah.
Personally, I don't have that problem. You know, I've never been run at, but they probably know. And generally, if, how can I say it? There are handlers that try and take advantage by saying things to judges, but they'll only say it if they know they can get away with it.
Yeah.
You know, but anyhow, that's another thing.
You were in the ring a lot, judging and handling. What about some of the, what were some of the funnier things that happened to you in the ring?
Well, famous story when I was a handler. I showed for a lady named Madeline Nugent. He's smiling. Actually, Billy Milne and I used to trade her each year. It was like a hockey player getting traded. I would show 1 year, and then Billy would show the next year, and then I would have to take her the year after. She loved key sounds. She loved her breed. But sometimes they were a test. Anyhow, one time it was at the car show, and I said to the girls, "Where's Madeline? She'd take the dog home to the hotel at night." And they said, "We haven't seen her today." And I said, "Well, I'm going up to the keys ring." It was a big entry of key sounds for some reason. It was a big booster or something. Anyhow, I'm standing there and I can see Madeline's car charging into the fairgrounds, her jumping out and running to the ring with the dog. And the dog is hobbling. I mean, really hobbling. And she goes up to me and I said, "Madeline, what's happened to him?" And the funny thing is, I'm pretty sure that was a dog named Rowdy. And we have a dog now being shown named Rowdy. Not the same dog.
Rowdy.
Anyhow, she said, "Oh, that stupid fool caught his foot in the door of the car." And I said, "Well, we can't show him." "Oh, we have to show him. It's a big booster." Jenny Lyon was judging. I thought, well, this is going to be. I said, "We cannot show him." She went on and was having a tiger. He was a special. I said, "Okay." So I go in the ring. Jenny says, "Take them around." She says, "Stop. We're halfway around." She comes over to me. And I said, "I know. Please excuse me." So we turn around, and Madeline's right in the center of the ring. "Oh, please, you have to keep them in the ring. It's the booster." And Jenny is looking at her, didn't know her. "Who is this mad woman?" So I grab her, and I haul her out of the ring and the dog, you know. But funny things. As a judge, I haven't had that much. The only sort of odd thing that happened to me, we went to Bermuda to judge. It was a set of six shows, and there were four judges. I judged best in show twice. Seriously. I did some groups twice. And the funny thing is, I didn't put the same dog up. The dog I got best in show to the first time wasn't in my second best in show, so I never put him up. So, but I really, there's not that much that happened.
Okay, if you weren't doing dogs for a living or a livelihood, what do you think you would have ended up doing?
Well, probably. I would have liked to been a teacher, probably, or an accountant. Boy, is that dry, hey?
Yeah.
I love numbers. It was always my favorite subject. After I finished school, I went back to Ryerson and took courses in calculus, if you can believe it.
Yeah, for fun. Anyhow,
just for fun. Or possibly I...
You said drummer.
Well, I was going to say you're a rock star. That was impossible.
Because you were a drummer for quite a
long time. I was. But that was another day. A lot of the arenas that we hold dog shows in this summer, I was in years ago with different bands. So I remembered them, but that was another life when I had hair down to my waist and cowboy boots and, I still, my favorite entertainment is music, but of all types except opera.
Now, does that answer our next question, the skill or talent that most of us wouldn't know about you or no? Because I knew you played drums though, so that's not true.
Yeah, well, there's that. The other talent I think I have is I have a weird sense of humor. And
is that I'm going to tell you a story
that I may have told you already. One time I was flying, this is when we're now doing the Cavaliers alone, and I was showing at Cavalier, and I was flying to a show in Edmonton, I think it was. And so I got to the Toronto airport. I went to the Air Canada lounge to have a bit of lunch. And I put my briefcase down and my Sherpa bag down with the dog in it. And I went and got something to eat, and I brought it back. And there's this guy sitting beside me, the three-piece suit, Mr. Business, right? And he's eating away, and then he says, excuse me. I said, yes. He said, that bag of yours moved. I said, what do you mean? He says, it moved. And I said, oh, really? He said, what's in the bag? I said, and I don't know where this came from. I said, I can't tell you. And he said, what do you mean you can't tell me? He says, tell me what's in the bag. And I said, and my boy, I was in a warped sense that day. I, in a very low voice, I said, now you can't say anything, but there's a beaver in the bag. He says, a beaver? What do you got a beaver in the bag for? And I told him that I work for the Ministry of Natural Resources, and once in a while we had beavers that acted up in Ontario. So we transplanted them in another part of Canada. That was my job, to travel with them and let them go out in Alberta. So he's eating away, and I start eating. He said, a beaver. He keeps going, a beaver. And finally, I couldn't let him go. I said, it's not a beaver, it's a dog. He said, a dog? What the hell you got a dog in the bag for? Anyhow.
This year, I get a beaver.
I used to do all kinds of things on the assistants like that and tell them different stories. But I had one assistant believe that the Dalai Lama came to Thunder Bay every summer and stayed. We were passing through the hills and there was a pagoda type building. I said, that's where the Dalai Lama comes in the summer.
Street in Thunder Bay.
Exactly.
What about superstitions over the years? A lot of handlers have different superstitions and judges.
Yeah, my main superstitions were to do with leads, like a lot of people. I had a lead that I showed Watson, the English setter, on, and God forbid we were down in St. John's, New Brunswick, and not the lead snap, but the choke snapped in two. I bet I spent an hour and a half wiring that thing together again so I could still use it. As a judge, I don't really have that many superstitions. I like to have a full breakfast. Bacon and eggs.
Okay, Bob, what past dog show person do you miss the most?
We travel a lot with two fellows named Lou DeRosha and John Lusk. And they're both gone now, and we really miss them. We had a hell of a lot of fun with them. We traveled through the States. We used to go to New York every year with them. And we just had a good time. The other two I was thinking of is Garrett Lambert. Garrett could be a little different sometimes, but we always got along with him, you know. And he was very professional, showed the dogs really well. And the other one is Skip Stambridge. I'd love to have dinner with those four.
Yeah, for sure.
And we have, but I think they'd be a lot of fun.
What do you think about the current judging process?
I'll speak to it first. In Canada, most people that show dogs in Canada are not rich. They're average Joes that like to get their dogs out, get them shown. Some of them can afford a handler. Some can't. And I think it's really paramount that our judges try and do a really conscientious job for their sake more than anything. I would like to see, about 2 years ago, I worked on for the Kennel Club, a new judges observers program. And I would like, hopefully, for judges to realize that it's meant as a aid and not a policing tool. Jenny Lyon and I both worked on this, and we put a lot of time into it. And I think it can help judges if they sit down and talk with the observer. The big problem we had is, I don't know how to put this, that we need really quality observers. And some of the people that could do that job won't step up and help. They're afraid of it for some reason, or they just don't want to be bothered.
Why do you think they'd be afraid of it? Because they're afraid the judge will find out they're observing them? Or
no, they do know they're observing them. They actually sit down with the judge. In this new program, they sit down and they have a discussion about the judging that day, not the police. Like, for instance, I could sit down and say, well, how do you feel overall your quality of dogs was today? And what are some good points and what are some bad points? Were you upset with any particular breed, the quality of that breed? And just a back and forth discussion. The judge gets to sign off and the observer signs off also. But it's meant to aid them, not to talk down to them, and not to say, you are doing that wrong. You know, the observer has no right to say that to a judge.
Right.
And that's right in the program that we've told the observers they cannot do that. Some of the foreign judges don't take too kindly. It's a whole different questionnaire for foreign judges. It's not in the same vein as I've just been talking about, but some get their backs up. Well, I've been judging for 45 years and somebody's going to watch me and all this sort of thing, you know? And so the observer has to be very tactful when they do this. And not just sign the paper and hand it to them. But the judge does know who's observing you. And in fact, they have the right to say, I do not want that person observing me.
Oh, okay.
We have a conflict for whatever reason. And the observer never has to know that. And, you know, so I think the program has a lot of merit, providing we can get more observers that, you know, are prepared to get involved. And other than that, I think the process is all right. It's, you know, it's not as harsh as some other places. Many years ago, sat on the committee that revamped the whole judges program, and we studied a lot of different countries and their programs. And I would love to do what they do in Sweden.
What's that?
Our people would never be able to handle it.
What do they do?
Well, they start off, you have to attend a seminar, which we do too. At the end of that weekend seminar, the people giving it can say, you may advance, you may not advance.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And they, when you're judging, you can have a breed expert. I was judging in, where the hell was it? Finland, I think, or Denmark. Denmark, maybe. And the morning of, I was doing Afghans, which are my original breed, and somebody comes along and said, these are your observer sheets. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, you're going to have an apprentice judge in the ring with you. I had no idea of this. So they set up in one corner, I set up another corner. They judge the whole class, I judge the whole class. They mark their book, then we go to the middle of the ring. It was totally up to me how we did this. But, and then I asked him, okay, how would you place the class and why? And then what I didn't know, at the end of the day, they said, okay, here's all your paperwork to write your reports on, this gentleman. So they gave me a stack of paperwork, which I was lucky. This fellow was really good, you know. But anyhow. They're a little harsher, yeah. I guess. But then the Scandinavian breeders and exhibitors are a little franker. Like they're more upfront. Mm-hmm. Like I can be standing beside two breeders of whatever, Pekingese, and they say, well, I really like the, and this is a discussion they're having, I really like the head you got on this dog. But the body is, but you could fix that if you bred to this dog or that dog. You do that here in North America.
That'd be great though, you know.
They had your head.
Yep.
You know, they,
a handful they, would listen, the rest would want to kill you. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But it's so good, you know. But
do you have a worst defeat in dogs, Bob?
How about going best and show at 10 o'clock at night and the next day going best opposite under the same judge?
That would.
And it was a big show. I had my ears whistling.
What's that?
I went winner's bitch the same day and the fellas that owned it came along and said to you, like, could Bob get a picture? She said, I would stay away from him for about an hour.
You got a best view out of it.
Yeah, I did, and that's what I said.
Yeah.
And it was a dog that showed up just for him from his area.
Wow. But he was loyal to it.
That's history.
All right. You can go back 20, well, more than that. You can go back to the 20-year-old Bob Whitney. Is there any advice you'd give him?
When it comes on the market, now you have to remember I'm 20.
Yeah.
Buy stock in Microsoft and Amazon.
So if you're in Back to the Future, you would do that.
The other thing is, and this I got from an economics teacher, he said, if you take a dime from every dollar you take in, you'll be a millionaire by 50, just with compound interest.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't do that. But, you know, I wasn't even involved in dogs at 20.
Hey,
so,
yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
You know, I always have to make my fortune, you know. I think I was 22 when I had 5 jobs all at the same time. I was making money to get a house. But if I may say one more thing, a weird situation in judging. We were judging in Korea, and they have some beautiful dogs there. But they have a lunch that's all out on China and everything. It's just beautiful. And somebody taps me on the shoulder and says, through an interpreter, would you mind coming and looking at a dog after you finish your lunch? It's not entered in the show, but we would like your opinion of this dog. Anyhow, and I said, what breed is it? And they said, Afghan Hound. I said, I'd love to. So after lunch, I go behind the tents and we come and they bring this Afghan out, which was gorgeous, just gorgeous. A black and tan dog. You know, I would have taken him home with me if I could. Anyhow, and so they asked me what I thought of the dog, and I told them he's beautiful here, gorgeous head, da da da. Sorry if I'm running.
No, you're good.
Anyhow, they said, we would like you to meet Dr. So-and-so. He developed this dog in a test tube. It was a test tube baby. He was a clone. I never forgot that as long as I live.
Wow. But,
it was just something that you never know. We've been all over the world and seeing all kinds of situations, but that really set me back on my heels.
Was he a clone of Pepsi or something like that?
He was American. Yeah, it was American breeding behind him. And actually, it was similar to Pepsi in some ways, but it wasn't Pepsi breeding. It was another dog from, two dogs from the East Coast. But it was gorgeous.
Wow, that's amazing. Something different.
Anyhow.
You know, chemists have like, we'll have like scientists developing our dogs next.
Whoop, you froze.
What's that?
You froze there for a minute.
Right.
You're all right.
Well, thank you, Robert. And thanks for giving us your time. And,
my pleasure.
It was good to see you. And are we going to see you soon at the shows?
Going to Quebec City this weekend.
Oh, I won't be there. I won't be there.
No.
I'm going to be at Burlington. Yeah. You're going to be at Burlington?
Oh, yeah. Perfect. The next 3 weekends, we're out again.
Oh, good.
On the road again.
Yeah. Excellent. Almost normal then.
Well, almost.
Almost.
Not quite. And it's coming back, unfortunately.
What's that?
It's coming back, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's just hope we keep a handle on it anyway. So.
Well, if everybody would pay attention to what they're doing.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, we're seeing it a lot in younger people.
Well, they think they're invincible, right?
Oh, of course. Didn't we all?
Well, of course. Sure we did.
Yeah.
But they've got to think about the rest of the world sitting next to them, so
yeah,
they might not get sick, but they might make somebody else sick.
Yeah.
All right, Bob.
Okay.
You have a good night. Give Mom my love.
I will.
Thanks, Bob. That was a great time. Thanks for giving us your time. We really enjoyed it. If you like what we're doing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. If you want to talk to me, go to dogshowtips@gmail.com. And if you want to find out some of my grooming videos, go to Leading Edge Dog Show Academy, and you'll find out a lot of my videos there. You can also just go right to willalexander.net and find out what's happening in my world. Until next time.